This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger. Good morning to you. Good morning, world. With our technology, we're reaching all parts of the world here on WGN Radio this morning. And today we're broadcasting from Midwest WGN. We returned from Arizona last the beginning of this week, and it's a little bit different here than it is in Arizona temperature-wise. But anyway, and I do have to say at the outset, Roger, because of my challenge on mobility, I had not been in downtown Chicago since, early summer. And so I saw the studio for the first time at WGN on East Wacker Drive yesterday. What a magnificent job they did of building a radio station.
It's fantastic, and we saw the pictures of you yesterday. I saw it on Facebook, people taking pictures, and you had a nice little glow to your face, and I don't think it was from the holiday cookies.
You're right. I hadn't gotten to the holiday cookies or the glug or anything else, but it was so much fun to get back to see everybody, and not everybody was there, but I did get to see a lot of folks. Didn't get to see you. And,
the overnight shift, as I'm sure you know from your many years in radio, the early morning shifts, you kind of have to change your sleeping schedule a little bit.
Yes,
and so most of my Friday is spent sleeping, so I'm nice and awake and strong and ready for you when you come on Saturday morning.
Well, I appreciate that and look forward to chatting with you throughout the morning. We are doing something this morning that we have done every year for I don't know how long. Wisconsin every year selects a young lady to serve as Alice in Dairyland. She works for the Department of Agriculture in the state of Wisconsin, promoting agriculture and all of its products. There have been 71 young ladies who have served the annual term of Alice in Dairyland, actually chosen in competition. And so we're going to visit this morning with the 71st Alice in Dairyland, who has, well, some Christmas gift ideas. Something special from Wisconsin is what they call it. And so we'll be talking about that in case you want to get some ideas that may be a little different than you'd get in a department store for a Christmas gift. So that's one of the things we'll be doing. And Richard Brock of Brock Associates in Milwaukee joins us in the studio, joins Max. And he's one of our favorite analysts because he tells it like it is, and he's going to be talking markets just a little bit later. So we better get going because we've got a lot to do this morning. And our first item of business, a visit with Alice in Dairyland. And we'll talk to Caitlin Riley, the current Alice in Dairyland, when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, this has become an annual event that I enjoy a great deal, the opportunity to visit with young ladies who represent the Wisconsin agricultural industries, and I say plural, industries, as Alice in Dairyland. I've been involved with this program since, I think, 1956, and they just get better and prettier every year, and Caitlin Riley is a prime example of that. So first of all, let's find out if you grew up on a dairy farm and tell me about it.
I did grow up on a dairy farm near your home, neck of the woods in Wisconsin, and my parents continue milking a herd of all Jersey cattle to this day. We only have about 70 cows in our herd, but with just mom and dad there, it's plenty of work to keep them busy. We also have about 200 acres of crop land that we use to continue feeding our cattle, and it's always been a blessing to grow up in that driftless area of Wisconsin.
So you had the opportunity to milk in a lot of milking contests, I'm betting.
Oh, yes. And I'm glad to say that I have won at least two of the milking contests as we go along, because you get quite a bit of practice, especially working on a smaller dairy farm. If you maybe don't feel like bringing a heifer in after she just calved, just want to strip her out real quick to feed a bull, it gives you good experience raising dad in the barn.
So let's talk a little bit about your education and what you want to do when you grow up.
I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison with a degree in broadcast journalism and strategic communications, and I love talking about farming. I loved talking about agriculture, and so I was inspired by broadcasters such as yourself, Orion, to continue sharing the word of what we do to provide a safe, wholesome, and secure food supply for families. So I worked in radio in Prairie du Chien as a farm news director, then moved up to Eau Claire and worked for a news station where I was a general news reporter, but I really enjoyed pulling out this pink pair of rubber boots I kept under my desk, because when I pulled those boots out, I knew I was going to a farm to do a farm story for the general public. I applied to become Alice in Dairyland not once but twice, because this was an opportunity that I really wanted to grab hold of, because it's the chance to learn about the many different industries we have in Wisconsin beyond my dairy background. So when my short year as Alice is over, I can have a better understanding of what I'm talking about when we talk about the importance of Wisconsin's $88.3 billion agriculture industry.
And you do get to talk to kids in school, don't you?
We do. We network with hundreds of classrooms to be able to educate those youth about how we get food from our farm gates to their plates. And what's really neat is this year we're doing an innovative strategy of providing a website for teachers where they're able to access information about our farmers and processors and bring that information and bring those connections into the classroom. And it really is a treat to be able to network one-on-one with these youth and tell them, I grew up on a farm, but I'm not all that different from you are. I eat food the same way you do. I use our farmer's fuel the same way that you do, and I use fiber. And so we're all interconnected in this industry.
And when you applied the first time and the second time, how many other young ladies applied?
There are typically dozens of women that apply, and I know we typically only see the top six, and that's because it's a process that starts in January with an initial application and interview, and from there they narrow it down to six top candidates who will go through an intensive three-day interview process and have plenty of homework assignments that remind you of college in the meantime to complete and showcase your passion for the industry. And I can say each year that I did apply, any of those women would have been outstanding Alice in Dairyland, and it's a thrilling to be able to see them go off into their careers even after Alice, or even if they weren't selected as Alice, and see what they're doing for our industry.
I served as a judge for the Alice contest just once. I said I will never do it again because too tough.
It is challenging, and I think the members of the selection panel work harder than we do, because we only have to write and complete the materials once, and you have to read through at least six examples, critique it, and meanwhile you have to go through and watch the women when we go on these fun industry tours and get a sneak peek inside different counties in Wisconsin. So I do not envy the selection panel whatsoever, but I can tell you it certainly was a pleasure to be a top candidate.
All right. The number two reason, besides getting to know Alice, for this visit is to talk about Christmas shopping and something special from Wisconsin. You have filled my room here with all sorts of products, and we have about 5 minutes or so to touch on them, but there is a website that people can go to.
There is a website that houses hundreds of businesses that are part of Something Special from Wisconsin. It's simply somethingspecialwi.com. If you forget that, just punch in Something Special from Wisconsin into your Google search browser, and that'll take you right to our website.
One of the things that surprised me about the material for your visit, the number of Christmas tree farms.
Yes, Wisconsin has nearly 870 Christmas tree farms, and that is a gift of experience when you get to take your family out to a real Christmas tree farm, select which one you want to incorporate in your holiday tradition, and bring it into your home. I cut down a Christmas tree myself with a handsaw, and I can say it's much more challenging than Dad made it look when we were growing growing up, but it was a story that I'm going to be able to share for the rest of my life. And the children who were there with me had the opportunity to tell me their stories of cutting down Christmas trees with mom and dad. And you also don't have to worry about storing those Christmas trees. I say they're green for three reasons. They're green for the economy because you're helping our local farmers who own those Christmas tree farms. They're green for the environment because you can recycle those Christmas trees and those nutrients will return to the earth. And they're green to showcase the beauty of something evergreen in Wisconsin during the winter time.
So now let's quickly go through some of the items that you have in your shopping basket here, and I'll let you start. You pick what you want to.
All right. Well, one of them that I want to make sure we get to is ginseng, because a lot of people don't realize we have ginseng here in Wisconsin. We're known as America's Dairyland, but other cultures know us as America's Fairyland, because folklore has it that ginseng can only be harvested in a fairyland type of place by those who are kind and humble of heart. And Wisconsin makes about 95% of the nation's supply of ginseng. You can enjoy it in a tea. There's also roots and capsules. So this is a gift that gives someone a cultural experience of a hidden gem right here in Wisconsin.
Okay, moving on.
Of course, talking about America's Dairyland, we have some mascarpone from Crave Brothers Farmstead. They are a common name, and these brothers do a wonderful job of producing pure white milk, but we're going to talk about green again, because they are carbon negative, meaning they produce more energy with their biodigester than what they use. They utilize water conservation and recycling, and I think that their story of this true family-owned business is what makes their product so sweet, and this mascarpone is great for both sweet and savory dishes. You can mix it into some chili to thicken the stew. You can also add it to your coffee. And I've made a malted milk dip using the mascarpone. You can find it on my website, AllisonDairyland.com. And that dip is a great holiday talking point when you're getting together and it's something new and unique. If you need some stocking stuffers, Newski's Applewood Smoked Meats has some of their traditional summer sausage. Or if you're looking for the main course, a spiral-sliced smoked honey-glazed ham. And what's fun about Newski's is their story. They came to Wisconsin in 1882 with this European style of smoking and curing meats. And in 1933, R.C. Newski said, "There's not meats here like what my family has." So he started marketing it across northern Wisconsin. Today, their meats are sold across the country and known for quality. And I think it really says something when we look at a business that started during the Great Depression and is still surviving to this day. The quality that we have in Wisconsin is just outstanding. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the honey that we have in Wisconsin, which can be a natural sweetener. This is from Wagner family. They own Dancing Bear Apiary over in Manitowoc area. And what's fun about Dancing Bear Apiary is that they have 42 years of beekeeping experience. They know how to take the honey directly from hive and put it into your kitchen while preserving those natural health benefits and flavors. And honey can help get you through the holiday season because we're busy, we're exhausted. It has 17 grams of carbohydrates per tablespoon. So it's a great way to keep you buzzing through the holiday time.
Good line.
Yeah. And of course, we have something sweet with pure Wisconsin maple syrup from In the Woods Sugar Bush. They collect sap from almost 1,300 trees, and they make about 50,000 gallons of finished Wisconsin maple syrup. And their techniques have changed in their generations of boiling down that sap into syrup. They use high-efficiency wood-fire evaporators and reverse osmosis system. It is truly something to see the technology involved, but when we boil down to it, all we're doing is taking something from nature and turning it into a sweet product without adding any additional ingredients. So In the Woods Sugar Bush maple syrup is great whether you have Christmas morning pancakes, maybe some handmade maple candies, or even if you want to make a homemade glaze for that ham. There's no better way than using pure Wisconsin maple syrup.
This is an unfair question, but do you have one favorite in that basketful?
Do I have one favorite? Oh, gosh. I'm not sure if there's one item that I think that could be a favorite, but I can tell you that there's many of these items that I have yet to try because I've been saving them as gifts to others. So I think as we go through the holiday season, the one gift that I'm most excited to be able to crack open once we finish with something special from Wisconsin is the ginseng. I did have a taste of it during the International ginseng festival, but it's something where I really want to get the full experience to be able to educate others about the qualities of Wisconsin ginseng.
And I guess we should mention apples, since you're from apple country in Wisconsin, where we would go every fall when I was a kid to pick apples.
And it's something where you don't think about it until you leave. When I left home, I took for granted the beautiful orchards that we have over in the Gays Mills area. And while apple season may be said and done, we can promise agritourism opportunities this holiday season for next fall. And there's plenty of apple products that we can still buy, whether it's apple jams or sauces, or even maybe an apple pie mix or something frozen in the freezer. So don't forget to stop by Wisconsin's nearly 300 commercial apple orchards next fall and get that experience as well.
So many other things we could talk about, cranberries and all of the other goodies, but we're out of time. So let's give that address again for people who want to see the full gamut of something special from Wisconsin.
They can simply go to somethingspecialwi.com, and that list has hundreds of businesses from which to choose.
We wish you much success, besides what you've already enjoyed in your career, as we talk to Caitlin Riley, who is Wisconsin's 71st Alice in Dairyland, here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is 27 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, and before we break for the news headlines, I do want to mention something that happened in Washington. Well, a lot of stuff happened in Washington this week, but an item that I really like. I think yesterday was the day it happened. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue invited four former U.S. Secretaries of Agriculture and hosted them for a lunch at the Department of Agriculture. And I got a photograph along with the story, and it shows the current secretary, Sonny Perdue, but John Block, Dan Glickman, Ann Veneman, and Mike Johans. They talked about the changes that have occurred in agriculture and trade and the infrastructure here in the United States. And delighted to see that, because a lot of experience coming together at that luncheon. And I knew and worked with all of those secretaries and a whole lot more. But it was good that the current secretary, I think, sat down and talked with them about their experience. And as he said, learned some things that maybe I can use in this current situation of trade and production and research and everything else. So we will be heading for Washington tomorrow evening after we return from the Samuelson family Christmas dinner in Westby, Wisconsin. And on Monday, we'll sit down with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue to do something we've done for the past 41 years. That is to spend half an hour visiting with the current secretary about some of the good things that have happened, some of the bad things that have happened, and what our secretary sees as coming up in the new year of 2019. We'll be sharing a lot of that visit with you here on WGN Radio Chicago. And again, let me say to Todd Manley, the general manager of WGN, and all of my many friends at the radio station, for the welcome back yesterday to spend some time with a lot of great people at what I consider the world's greatest radio station, WGN in Chicago. I've been fortunate enough to call that my working home since 1960. So thanks to Todd and all of the people who stopped by to say hello yesterday, and we appreciate that. Where it's 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And coming up, we're going to be talking markets. Max will sit down with Richard Brock of Brock Associates, based in Milwaukee, to talk about this fascinating and challenging market world that we hit on a daily basis in the world of agriculture. And a lot going on, indeed. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about that because it's time for Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wenck Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. and all the good folks at Wink Products Company in Iowa. They've been with us for a long time here on the Saturday Morning Show, and the Wink family wants to say a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and Happy Holidays to all of you out there. So I am Orion, of course, and this morning I'm going to be talking about one of the busiest agricultural weeks in Washington, D.C. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products, products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves those ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 71 years and it's still number one. To learn more about the full line of Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. Well, for the past 4 or 5 months, I've spent a lot of time on Samuelson Says, telling members of Congress to get with it and get a farm bill written, telling our trade negotiators to get NAFTA rewritten, and to tell our trade negotiators to settle the trade war that we currently have with China. And you know what? That all happened last week. Has to be the busiest week in my memory for farmers in our nation's capital. But they got it done. And so instead of telling them to get with it and get to work on doing all of this activity, I'll now simply say thank you for doing what you did and for getting it done. As Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue said, farmers needed that 5-year plan for the U.S. Department of Agriculture because farming is more than a 1-year business. They have to make plans far in advance, and that means getting the rules they're going to play by in agriculture in advance so that they'll know what they're dealing with for the next 5 years. And the trade situation? Well, maybe it's getting a little better because the same week of all of this activity, the Chinese came in and bought U.S. soybeans. First time in about 6 months. And the market didn't really act and react the way that producers thought, because it went down sharply the day after the announcement of the purchases by China. But at least we got some things done, and to all of you involved in doing it, and that means farm organizations and individual farmers, for letting the members of Congress know that this is important to the well-being of food producers in the United States. And thank you for getting involved in that and getting it done so that we do have the plan that will be in place now for the next 5 years. Congratulations and thanks to all who got it done. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. And this is a presentation of the WGN Farm Department. And thank you for being with us on a weekly basis for my comments on Samuelson Says, and whether you agree or disagree with what I say, not a problem, but I always like to get your reaction and your thoughts to some of the topics that we are talking about. Well, we're coming up to 21 minutes before 6 o'clock and getting ready to join Max Armstrong and our guest in the studio to talk about market activity, and we'll do that when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
In the studio with us this weekend, old friend Richard Brock. Let's talk about this business of agriculture and a little bit of news from China in recent days, and some enthusiasm with the fact that they have now begun to buy beans. Yeah. In the minds of some traders, I guess, though, not enough.
You know, I think that is correct. In the eyes of some traders. Yeah, I think an important thing to look at in this market right now, and we might be the only bulls out there. I mean, I think this market's all going higher, corn and soybeans. And I tell you, in the last 2 weeks, Max, I've spent most of my time arguing with people because they're looking at the fundamentals and saying they're not going to buy that much, that the fundamentals are bearish. And I just want people to think about February, March of 2013, when everybody was bullish, all the fundamentals were bullish, the technicals were saying, and sell, 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 and nobody wanted to listen. And now we're in the opposite side of this thing, where people are looking at the fundamentals and saying, gee, we have too much corn worldwide, we have too many beans worldwide, this thing can't go up, and yet we're making new five-month highs right now, Max. And people are ignoring the fact that the trend of this is up, and when you get so much negative news in a market, surprises are going to be bullish, not negative. And then you take a look at soybeans themselves. Since 1970, we track when cash soybeans make their high during the marking year. I can tell you, soybeans have never, never made their high in the month of December. And here you've got a market that's making new highs. And so, you know, sometimes it takes the patience of a saint. But you look at what the news is filtering in, the attitudes of most people are negative. You know, I mean, I've been in the speaker circuit heavy the last 2 weeks, and people will argue with me that I can't be right, that this market can't go up, just like they argued in February and in March of 13. And, you know, people are people. People believe what they see, and people get emotional. And, you know, the biggest mistake ever made in a market, there's three emotions, greed, hope, and fear in markets. 90% of the sales in a gray market are based on fear. And I think that's a stage a lot of people come out of. They look at this soybean market now, it's rallied $1.20, $1.30 off the lows, and they, man, this looks good, because they're comparing to the lowest price of the year. Back in 13, people wouldn't sell it because they were comparing to the highest price of the year. Greed and hope keeps us from selling a market. Fear causes sales to take place too early. And so, you know, we're sticking to our guns right now. I think this is going to be a really good year. Low prices build demand. And we'll start getting more surprises on the demand side, I think, after the first of the year. And you just got to be patient in this kind of a market. Because, you know, I look at it and I tell farm audiences, you know, you buy a market not because you think it's going up, because you think it's done going down. So we've been buying soybean meal. You know, what are my odds that a hog farmer is going to buy meal cheaper than he's been able to buy it in the last 2 months? I think it's really slim. And, you know, I don't know how high this thing could go, but I can say this. It's done going down. And so I want to own it. And both beans and corn. Corn's only peaked this time of the year one time since 1970. And here we are, we have both markets making new highs. So, you know, as far as I take a look, okay, what are my odds? My odds are I'm going to be able to sell it for more than I can today.
Corn has only peaked one time this time of the year since 1970.
And soybeans, zero. Zero times since 1970. Never had a top in the month of December. And in both commodities, your odds don't go up hardly at all until you get into March. And then even then, it's fairly slim. If you look at the odds, your odds are not going to be very high until you get to June and July. And but most farmers, if you're farming any size, can't wait until June or July. Right. I mean, if a guy's raising 500,000 bushels of corn, he's not going to wait until July to start selling it. He has to have trucks on the road every day. A guy farming 500 acres, he can do whatever he wants. He can wait.
So, obviously, some this year waited to pull the trigger, and it didn't work.
I think so. And, you know, it's been a tough year because the only really good selling opportunity we've had in these markets was the Tuesday following Labor Day weekend, Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, we had corn over $4. We had soybeans over $10. And, you know, there was one day we sold, during that week, we sold all our old crop corn and beans, went to 80% price in new crop beans and 70% price in new crop corn. And since then, the opportunities have not been good. And the market, you know, dropped very quickly, as is typical in a bear market. And now we're grinding higher. And bull markets are tough because they are a grind. They're slow. You know, it isn't like a bear market. And so you got to really be patient in this kind of a market and avoid spending much time at the coffee shop, because everybody there is going to be bearish and influences and your opinion. And you just got to go with the big picture here and say, look, I think my odds are better. This thing's going higher.
I want to underscore that for just a moment before we go back to talking about the actual prices and the market activity. It can be a terrible downer to sit there and listen to the people around the table. And now that's been translated into the social media as you look at some of the commentary there as well. And it isn't healthy, is it? I mean, we saw this in the 80s. The very same thing took place. It was a situation of, hey, I can top your bad news. Did you hear this?
Yeah. And there's a lot of that.
And, yet, and it feeds on itself.
It feeds on itself. The top, I always say the top 20% of producers are doing an excellent job and doing a good job marketing, et cetera. I had a banker on a program that I was on with this past week said, you know, he said, I've been looking at financial statements. He said, I think it's only 15%, but I mean, slicing hairs there. But the top group of farmers are doing very well financially. We have a tendency to concentrate on negative news. And, you know, and it is difficult out there right now because if a farmer missed the bear market in 13 or 14, that was when the big money was made. It's been difficult since then. And so if they missed that, and you go back the last 3 years, if they haven't cash flowed in the last 3 years, which if they miss those two bear markets, odds are a lot of them have not cash flowed, then all of a sudden the bank examiners are coming in to the rural banks and saying, look, if you have somebody who hasn't cash flowed in 3 years, you know, we're going to classify that loan as a non-performing asset, and you're going to ante up more money. And so the pressure gets really difficult for some people here because it's hard to bail out of this kind of a situation. I mean, it can be done, and most producers, I think, will, but they also have to have a very patient ag lender and one willing to stick with them, or they might end up, in a lot of cases I'm seeing right now in the Midwest, the bankers say, look, we'll stick with you, but you need to sell off a 50 or an 80.
We're seeing some of that. Yeah, some assets are being sold.
We are seeing that. And some, you know, that's, you know, people can survive that, though.
Let's back up to a comment you made a little bit earlier. You alluded to after the beginning of the new year, the possibility of more buying coming in that we maybe haven't anticipated. What were you saying there? After the Chinese New Year or what?
No, I think after, once we get into January, you know, China, in our opinion, they don't have enough beans to get them through the end of February, which is, you know, late February, it's mostly March, is when the South American beans will be coming in. And so they need more beans to get them through that time frame. So
now some of the beans are coming out early, though, in South America this year, right? Because
will.
Of early planting?
They will. And if we need to capture as much of this market as we can right now, because if it gets away, you know, in 3 years' time, soybeans will be produced primarily in South America and will become the world's corn producer. And that's a risk that we take. I think, you know, you also...
But, I mean, that really is likely to happen, isn't it?
It could.
I mean,
yeah, it could very likely happen. You know, I can remember all the way back to 1971 and 72, Max, when you and I are at Purdue, I was on the university debate team, and that year our debate topic was, be it resolved that that international trade of agricultural commodities should be based upon the law of comparative advantage. In other words, everything should take down all trade barriers and everything's going to be produced where the cheapest producer is. And back then, I mean, I'm talking 71, 72, it was argued that all the soybeans will eventually be produced in South America and will produce all the corn for the world. And, you know, I don't want to see that happen, but I think they are going to outstrip us in total soybean production this year. I mean, this is now they've caught us, and now I think they're going to go ahead of us.
And the trade dispute, regardless of what side of the issue you want to take here, has really hastened this process, has it not?
Yeah, it has. It has. I mean, these are not fun times. And, you know, you got to have a little bit of confidence in Donald Trump that his skills as a negotiator are going to turn out favorably for us. Some people say, well, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm in the camp that I think it is going to happen. When he says they're going to buy a lot of our soybeans, I don't know what his definition of a lot is.
That has been the big question of the past week.
That has been the big question.
Past 2 weeks.
You know, you have to assume he doesn't know a whole lot about agriculture, so a lot to him might be different than what it is to the American Soybean Association.
But you are saying that they have the need.
They do have the need. They're not going to buy our corn. They could buy our ethanol. And but in soybeans, they have the need, and I think they want to start building their reserves of soybeans up somewhat. And, you know, the other side of that coin, too, is, Max, is who has the advantage in these negotiations? China's economy is very weak right now. I think they need us more than we need them. And our ace is the soybean market. They want to be able to sell cars over here. They want to be able to sell a lot of goods over here. And, of course, it also comes down to intellectual property. And Trump doesn't want to give up on that. And so, you know, they really need to sell us more than we need to sell them. And so I think soybeans will come out of that argument favorably.
There's a narrow window of opportunity, though, you're saying.
I think the window of opportunity is between now and the end of March. You know, if a lot of good things haven't happened by March, then we've got some really serious problems.
Do you see in corn and in wheat?
Wheat's going to follow the corn market. And corn, you know, frankly, that one's a little more difficult for me to get bullish in. I think we're going to trend higher here for a while. Basis levels have improved incredibly in the last 6 weeks. And so we're getting prices back up to near break even, but we're not above. I don't think the market's going to average. The concern of corn is the sharp increase we'll likely see in planted acreage this spring. And we're going to see a lot of shifts.
That pendulum's going to swing, isn't it?
Yeah, the pendulum's going to swing. So news coming in the corn market, I'm afraid, could be more on the negative side, whereas news on the soybean, you know, we've got all the negative news the market can handle. And that doesn't mean you can't go down short term in either one of them. Short term, we could see some backlash here in both markets. But longer term, I think you just kind of turn your quote machines off until we get into January. And let's see where we're at right now. Trend is up. Trend is your friend. And so, you know, I'm willing to roll the dice here a little bit.
Good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in and sharing some thoughts with us. We appreciate it.
Max, thanks for having me on.
Richard Brock joining us this weekend to the studio here.
Just a couple of additional comments on the discussion that Max and Richard Brock carried out. China did make other news besides buying U.S. soybeans this past week. China announced it's ready to more than triple its ethanol production capacity by 2020, with demand for the commodity expected to surge as the country shifts toward cleaner fuels. The nation, China, currently building or seeking approval for new ethanol plants with capacity to produce 6.6 million tons of the biofuel a year. And China had an ethanol production capacity of 2.8 million tons in 2017, but the country last year said it would require gasoline supplies nationwide to be blended with ethanol by 2020, a move that would require about 15 million tons of the biofuel annually. So they made news other than buying soybeans. I've been following markets at the Board of Trade, the grain market, and the oilseed market since 1960. And I still can't understand or figure out the thinking of traders. They come up with what to me are some very strange reasons for the market moving the way it does. And we saw that this week. 2 weeks ago, we weren't selling any soybeans to China. We were talking about getting that ironed out so we could do it, but we weren't selling any U.S. soybeans to China. Well, when we finally got the announcement that China was buying cargoes of U.S. soybeans, I think I did, and I think a lot of you did, you thought the market price of soybeans would go up. The day after we got the announcement from China, the price of soybeans went down 11 cents. That was on Thursday, and the price of soybeans went down again on Friday. And I'm saying, what happened? Well, then we're getting comments from traders saying, well, the numbers were underwhelming. They weren't as large as we thought they would be. But 2 weeks ago, we weren't thinking there would be any soybean sales. It's a challenge to keep figuring out sometimes how market makers really think. As we look at the end of this trading week, live cattle futures narrowly lower yesterday. The February live cattle futures traded at $122.40 a hundredweight, and that was down 30 cents for the day. January feeder cattle down 55 cents at $147.42. In the grain market yesterday, we saw soybean prices fall again. And that, as I said, coming despite the fact that China came into the market to buy U.S. soybeans. But Friday, January soybeans down 7 cents a bushel. December corn did end higher yesterday, up 2¾ cents. And March wheat down 6 cents for the day in yesterday's trade. Well, markets are going to be a little more bouncy, perhaps, than we've seen recently because we're approaching the holiday, the season of Christmas and New Year's. Typically, a lot of traders take time off at that time, lower trading population on the floor and in the marketplace. And so that can sometimes make swings or not any. We'll have to wait and find out. But we'll be here next week to cover it all as we approach the Christmas week on the Saturday morning show. So thanks to all of you for joining us every Saturday morning. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, our engineer, who does everything right every week to make this work the way it should work.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.